Final hour of overtime. Toby Altizer with you till 10 o'clock. Want to talk a little Nats before we get out of here. Had a chance to catch up with the ace of the Nats, Cade Cavalli. We'll play that interview for you a little bit later. Also, that'll be on the next episode of Bustin' Loose Baseball. That'll also be live on these airwaves tomorrow night after overtime at 10 o'clock. So you can check it out there or check out wherever you get your podcast. Grant and I will record a new podcast recapping this Marlins series, which won't be fun. Nats have been playing good ball, and then all of a sudden you play the Marlins and just run into a buzzsaw, apparently.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the Marlins, all credit to them, they are a good ball club. They don't hit a lot of home runs, but they get on base. Xavier Edwards has had a phenomenal year.
Love Liam, X. Liam like watching Otto Lopez. Like, they have a fun up-the-middle duo.
Stowers.
Shouldn't be taking all three at Nationals Park, regardless. No. We'll have a new Bustin' Loose Baseball for you coming out in a couple of hours, coming out tomorrow morning. Make sure you check that out. But first, let's hear from Commanders wide receiver Jalen Lane. Had a chance to catch up with him after practice yesterday at OTAs. Always great to chat with him. Loved watching him at Virginia Tech. Loved what he was able to do last season. Got to work on the hands a little bit on offense, but he was spectacular as a punt returner. Here was Jalen Lane after practice yesterday.
Toby Altizer out here at OTAs with Commanders wide receiver Jalen Lane. Jalen, how have you felt for the first couple days here at OTAs in the offseason?
Man, it's been real fun, man, just getting all the guys in, getting running plays for the offense. It's been real fun, and just blessed and happy to be out here.
What have you noticed in this new offense with David Blough?
I just feel like he's just opening us up. He's getting guys touches, and he's letting us use our skill set to our best of ability. You're going to see a lot of speed on the field, a lot of guys who get playmakers getting touches. And, I feel like that's how you make a great offense, getting the right guys the ball at the right time.
He talked about it being a collaborative effort with the coaches and players. How have you felt like that's worked with you and David Blough and the coaching staff?
Oh, yeah, from the jump since we started, when did we get back? In April or May, whenever we first started, I felt like we can tell how they built the offense and how they made it as kind of easier and tailored for us to learn it quick so we can get out here at a time like this and be able to run through a lot of installs. So I think that's what he kind of meant by that.
What are some of the big differences that you've noticed for yourself personally in this offense?
Oh, man, I just feel like, it's kind of made me more confident. Seeing the offense been built from the ground up, I'm able to understand it more. I'm able to understand, the whole play and what's going on and where I need to be at the right time. So it's helping me with my football knowledge just as much as my physical skill set.
Going into your second year, how much more comfortable are you going through this offseason and getting ready for this year?
Man, like I said, it's a lot more confidence. Being through it one time, so I kind of know what to expect. And I'm just out here every day just working on my craft, trying to get better and find ways to help the team.
We heard Terry talk in an interview not that long ago about the difference in Jaden Daniels and being even more vocal than he was last season in his rookie season. Yep. Have you noticed that as well?
Oh, yeah. I think it's very a prominent notice. I feel like it's probably something that he, made a change in standard for himself. He's going to be more vocal and stuff like that. And, you can see his leadership skills are just on another level. They're already good, but you can see it. He's taking that next level, so it's been pretty cool to see.
It feels like just being out here watching some of the OTAs and stuff, you can tell a difference in the defensive side of the football as well, a new scheme. What have you seen on that?
For sure, man. One, you can see them boys up front. We got some dogs up front, but and on the back end too. But, like what I've been seeing, it's a lot. Guys are communicating a lot of communication. They're working through things, and, I'm excited to watch them work come the fall. But it's been real great work for us because seeing different looks, seeing different coverages, and knowing how to react to anything we can see out there. So it's been good for both sides.
Toby Altizer with Commander second year receiver Jalen Lane. I want to ask you about Virginia Tech in just a second.
Go ahead.
Back to your rookie season, what were some of the things that you felt like you did really well, and then what are some things you want to improve on going into year two?
Yeah, I feel like I was kind of thrusting into a role, and I feel like I handled it pretty well. We had a lot of guys getting hurt, injured, and just out. And but I feel like it helped me a lot, helped me grow, helped me learn things about myself, helped me learn how to get open. And those are all skill sets that I'm trying to bring into this season. So I'm excited to showcase that.
Last thing, Hokies, James Franklin, how excited are you?
Man, I'm excited for them boys, man. I met Coach Franklin. I went to a practice not too long ago. Them boys out there working, so shout out to Hokies, but come fall, I think they're going to make some noise.
Yeah, what are we thinking? 8-9 wins, bowl game?
I'm not going to put a number on it. I'm not going to put a number on it, but I think they're going to be pretty good.
All right, Jalen Lane, appreciating. Best of luck this season.
Appreciate you.
That was Jalen Lane out at Commanders OTAs. Had a chance to catch up with him. I'm really excited for him. You know, I don't know what his role on offense is going to look like. When you think about him, he's kind of a slot-only type of player, but he's electric when he gets the ball in his hands. He's someone who you watch him on punt returns, and he's really good in space. At Virginia Tech, you could kind of count on it once a game that he was going to run an end-around. And it was funny watching teams play Virginia Tech because once a game, I could have told you that Jalen Lane was going to get an end-around. So when he would be coming in motion, I don't know how teams still weren't ready for the end-around, Jalen Lane, but he still would get the edge and would at least pick up 10 or 15 yards almost every time they would run that play. But I'm curious to see if there is a role that they can find for him, someone who is good in space, can make a guy miss, and understands how to get up the field as a punt returner. Are there ways you can get him the ball on some tunnel screens, or can you get him the ball on a bubble or something of that nature, or even like the end-arounds like I mentioned? Can you do some stuff like that to help you out in some of the extra ways that he can do things? And last year, I think for him, he showed some promise as a receiver, but his big issue was drops, and he's got to be a little more sure-handed because he would get open sometimes, and whoever was playing quarterback would get on the football, but he wouldn't be able to hang on to it. So I think he's got to be a little more reliable with his hands. But he's always going to have a spot, at least for the next couple of seasons, because I think you can see how dynamic he is as a punt returner. And so even if he's just their punt returner and then deep down the depth chart, I think he has a spot. But I'm curious to see how some of the other guys step up, fill those sorts of roles. And honestly, I mean, you've got a bunch of dudes that you can, again, kind of take your pick of who you think will be good and who's going to step up and have a really big role. As, Jalen Brunson's walking down the tunnel. Looks like he might have banged up his ankle or something. As the Spurs have opened it up. They're up by 10 now, 27-17. They've gone on a run here through the middle and end of the first quarter. But back to the Commanders. Deami Brown is someone that I'm very interested in. I'm curious to see how he does as the year goes on. And that chemistry, you know, Dan Quinn mentioned, you're bringing back a guy that had been here, and I know it's a new coordinator, it's a new offense, but he said he felt like he picked everything up really quickly, more so than, you know, other guys that are coming back and learning new things. It was almost like, oh, okay, you pick everything up a little bit quicker because you've been here before, you've worked with Jaden before, you've been in a room with Terry before, and so it feels like getting him incorporated back in, I think he could actually be a key cog for this thing to work. I don't think he's a number two receiver. I don't think he's going to go for 700-800 yards or anything. But I mean, we remember watching what he did in that Detroit playoff game and down the stretch of the season and into the playoffs. He kind of turned into their de facto number two. I mean, my favorite play of that 2024 season, one of them was that throw that Jaden made and Deami caught it and couldn't even see the ball. DB covered his eyes, but the throw was so good that they say the ball catches itself. That's kind of what it did for Deami. It was right in the basket there for Deami to catch. I think he could be a big part of this thing and giving you some of that downfield, downfield threat, stretch the defense a little bit. I think he could add a lot to this offense. And you know, that's the thing. As much as I don't feel great about their receiving options behind Terry, there are a lot of guys that have potential and potential upside. So it's about trying to find a way to unlock those guys. And if you want to look on the real positive side of things, maybe a couple of those guys hit at the same time, and all of a sudden you're looking at a much better receiving core than we were thinking going into the year, and you feel a lot better about where you're at right behind Terry McLaurin. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's get into the Washington Nationals. Things didn't go well last couple of days over at Nats Park, but this team overall through 63 games is a lot better than we were thinking. You feel good about where this team is at. How good do you feel about what you've seen from this front office and this coaching staff compared to what you were thinking in the offseason? How much more confidence do you feel now? 800-636-1067. Also, we'll play a conversation I had with Nats ace Kate Cavalli before we get out of here tonight. Caught up with him before the game today. You're listening to Overtime on 106.7 The Fan. Overtime on the Fan. Toby Altizer with you till 10 o'clock. So it looks like the Brunson injury was a knee injury. So we'll keep you updated if we learn anything more about that. Hopefully he's going to be all right. I mean, that would be awful. That would be awful if game one, first quarter, the Knicks star goes down. That'd be bad.
I'm trying to think. Has that happened before?
Game one?
Not just basketball, but I'm trying to think.
I mean, game seven last year, Tyrese Halliburton went down and kind of ruined the whole game.
He did ruin the whole thing.
Game one? I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. got hurt in the Super Bowl. The Rams won, but that didn't derail anything.
They won.
Yeah, so they still won that one. I don't know. I'm sure there are examples. I just can't think of any off the top of my head.
The illegal hit on Marvin Harrison Jr. against Georgia.
Why am I not shocked that you immediately go to a Buckeyes game?
Because it was illegal.
Why am I not shocked? Let's get into the Nationals. 63 games in now. The Nationals back below 500, just a game below. 31-32. They dropped three in a row to the Marlins. But I think if you asked anybody where you thought this team was going to be through 63 games going into June, they would not have told you that they would have been this exciting and where they're at right now. I don't think anyone was thinking that this team would be what it is right now. And so if you want to hop in, feel free, 800-636-1067. The question I've got is, how much more confidence now do you have in this front office and coaching staff than what you did at the beginning of the year? Because if I have to refresh you on what we were talking about, what some of the storylines were going into the season, I think there was a renewed energy and excitement from fans because they wanted something different than what they had seen the last couple of years with Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez. So there was an excitement. There's no question about it. But one of the things that I was trying to do is, for a lot of baseball fans, especially modern baseball fans, anytime you go young and analytical, everyone just goes immediately, boom, it's going to work. Boom, they nailed it. And I just wanted to be a little bit careful not to get ahead of ourselves and, oh yeah, just because they went and hired Paul Toboni, who's in his 30s, just because they went and hired Blake Butera because he's in his 30s, boom, it's going to work. I wanted to just be a little bit, like, let's just chill a little bit. Not to say I don't believe in them, not to say I don't like them, but let's just be a little bit patient with this. Let's let it see it play out. And now, where you're at, it's way different. And also, one of the talking points this offseason with Paul Toboni and what he was doing this offseason was, okay, great, so you brought in a new president of baseball operations and he did the usual baseball thing here for the Nationals and signed nobody. I mean, their biggest offseason move was, I guess, trading away Ferrer and getting back Harry Ford.
Miles Michaelis.
Signing Miles Michaelis. Signing Zach Littell during spring training for $7 million. Like, very, very.
I have said this over and over again. Lucas Giolito was on the board for them, and they just let him.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't sign. Now, I don't know that Giolito necessarily wanted to sign here because of the fact that no one really thought that this team was going to be contending or anything, and I still think that they want to develop guys.
Well, no one wanted to sign him.
No. So he ultimately goes to San Diego. I don't fault them for not signing him, but at the same point, it would help out their starting pitching staff, no question about it. But they didn't do anything in terms of big moves this offseason. So going into the year, I think there was some of the, well, I believe in Paul Toboni, I believe in Blake Butera, but I don't think this team is going to be very good. I think if you asked a majority of Nationals fans, that's probably what they would feel. They're like, I like this Paul Toboni guy. Anytime he talks on the radio or anytime, you know, one of us, me, Grant, Danny, talk about him, we talk about how sharp he is and how smart he is. You listen to any of the beat writers, oh yeah, he's going to be really good at what he's doing. Like, I think most people believed in Paul Toboni, but then you saw the moves this offseason, you're like, oh, okay, so it's going to be fun, but it ain't going to be this year fun. Like, it ain't going to be a team this year that's going to be a blast to watch. And then you get through 63 games, and they're just a game under 500, and that's only after losing three in a row to the Marlins, and they're one of the best offenses in the sport. And so I think now I look at what they're doing, and I have utmost confidence that they're going to be able to build what they're trying to build here and do what they're trying to do here. Because I wanted to, again, have a patient approach to this. Just because they hired a bunch of young guys in their 30s that are more analytical didn't mean that everything was going to work. Just because you do that doesn't necessarily guarantee success. So I was trying to, like, let's just make sure this thing works. And now through 60 games, again, it's 60 games. It's not 162, a full season. But 60 isn't a small sample size anymore. This is over a third of the season. You know, we're getting close to being halfway done here in 20 games. So this isn't a tiny sample size anymore. But the improvement that you have seen from top to bottom, and I'm not just talking about on the major league roster, but all the way down to, you know, AAA, AA, High A, Single A, Rookie Ball, you're seeing improvements up and down the organization. That gives me hope in Paul Toboni and what he's trying to do. You're seeing guys like Seaver King, who's on the brink of making his major league debut hopefully later this year. That's a guy that was a cast off, someone that was thought to be a failed draft pick of Mike Rizzo and someone that didn't have much left, and he was going to be a failure and a waste of a top 10 pick. And look at the change in him this season, going from a forgettable player who was a 10th overall pick to now this season, through 40-plus games, I think his streak was to start the year, starting in AA and then going up to AAA, continued then. 40-plus games he got on base to start the year. 40-plus, I think it was 42 was the number. Impressive to see the growth for him, to see where he's at now, where I think realistically by August, maybe September call-up, I think he fits right into that realm. I think you could see him make his major league debut, someone that really could help this team out, plays shortstop, plays a little bit of the outfield, right-handed bat, been really, really impressive, already hit more home runs this season than he did all of last year in the minors. So he's been impressive this season. Yoandy Morales is tearing the cover off the ball at AAA. But even other guys that are starting to take steps forward, like Eli Willits, you've seen him be really good at Single A. But the guys that they acquired in the Mackenzie Gore deal, Devin Fitzgerald, Yeremy Cabrera, Gavin Fien has struggled, but he's now a top 100 prospect. One of the main things that was the knock on the Mackenzie Gore deal is they didn't acquire any quote-unquote top 100 prospects. They didn't get guys that on the publications were in the top 100. And now you look, and you could find one or two guys already inside the top 100 through a couple of months of the season. So when Paul Toboni was identifying guys to trade for in that deal, he found guys that maybe weren't in the top 100, but were fringe guys that he could bring in and have now worked their way into the top 100. So up and down the system, you're seeing improvements. That's the hope that you get in Paul Toboni. That's the growth. That's the, okay, we're seeing the vision here with Paul Toboni and what he's trying to do and trying to give Blake Butera a chance at the major league level as well. And then what Blake and his staff has been able to do is be able to turn this team around where you're seeing growth from guys at the major league level that at times in previous iterations of this Nationals team, the minor league system wasn't great, but there were times that you'd see success stories of guys really working hard and seeing them grow, and then they get to the big league level and it kind of plateau. I think of Jacob Young. Jacob Young is someone that he wasn't a highly thought of prospect in the minor leagues, and he also wasn't somebody that was thought of as this defensive wizard in the minor leagues. Because he didn't play center field in the minors. That was saved for guys like James Wood. That was saved for guys like even like a Christian Vaquero or Elijah Green. Guys that were thought to be bigger parts of the future for this team. And instead, he was relegated to a corner. Has a great year. Eventually gets his way up to the majors. Gets more and more comfortable in center field. And now has worked his way into being a gold glove caliber center fielder. Really, really good in center. But had kind of fallen behind as a hitter. And this season, you're seeing a change in approach, being more aggressive, trying to do damage with his swings instead of just trying to hit the ball on the ground to the right side, which frustrated me so much watching that swing. Now you're seeing him try to drive the baseball and make a difference. And what do you know? 8 homers for JY this season. You're seeing a difference with him. You're seeing a difference at the plate with CJ Abrams. You're seeing him take pitches that usually he would ground out on. You're seeing him take pitches that he might pop up in the infield. You're seeing him be more patient at the plate. Even James Wood has seen major improvements this season and some of the things that he's doing. So up and down the lineup, you're seeing improvements.
Based off what we've seen this year, I mean, the hitting is great.
Yes.
You know, one of the best in scoring in the league. Are they still number one?
Yeah.
Ahead of the Braves. They're pretty much showing us that they have to go out and spend money. I mean, this on the pitching side. I mean, this is atrocious.
Well,
on the pitching side. Look at the White Sox. You have Davis Martin, who's having a Cy Young year at a 2.6 ERA. But even guys like Sean Newcomb in the bullpen, they're also having a great year. He has a 2 ERA. I mean, there's no one on the Nats who's even remotely close to having that.
Well, and that's the key right there, Wes. I think that's the thing that's a major question for this team going forward. Where do you get that pitching? Where do you get it? They have some guys in the minors, but their highly thought of arms are not that close to the big leagues, or they're not going to be here this year. You know, the Harleen Susanas of the world, Travis Sikora, both those guys coming off injury, so they're not going to be here this year. Miguel Cime just got bumped up, but he's just in high A. He's a youngster out of high school drafted last year. By the way, struck out over 50 in 20-plus innings. He's disgusting in Fredericksburg, so he gets bumped up to high A. He had no competition at Fredericksburg. So he gets bumped up, but he's a while away. Landon Harmon's exciting. He's a while away. Alex Clemmy, maybe if everything went well, he could be here at the end of this year, but I would think that he's not going to be here until at least next season. So all of their big-time arms that are highly thought of in the system aren't going to be here for at least a couple of years. And so that's the big question, Wes. Where does that pitching come from? Do you have to go sign guys? That's the easiest way to do it if you're going to get guys now. That's also going to cost you a lot of money. So that'll be interesting to see the way that they go about that, whether they're going to be able to get guys. The Rays are finding a different approach right now where they're signing some relievers that are turning back into starters and have been effective. We were talking about Nick Martinez in a break. Didn't work well for your fantasy team today, Wes. But overall this season has been really good.
Been consistent.
So
go back to 2019. I mean, how many of the guys on the Nats pitching staff was homegrown?
Yeah.
Yep. You have to go out and spend money. And the Nats are a mark. They're not the Cleveland Guardians. Well, and forget the CBA agreement.
But they haven't had a chance yet. So that's the one thing I'm curious about. We've seen the hitting be really good. I'm curious to see how they can develop pitching and if they can. Because that's the thing, Wes. They haven't had the chance to build their system yet like a Milwaukee Brewers where they can churn through pitchers. They haven't had a chance to build their system yet like a Cleveland Guardian where they have to move on from some guys like a Shane Bieber and here comes a Tanner Bibee, right? Like they haven't had a chance to have that sort of thing yet. So that's something I'm interested to see.
Have less money and are still able to develop. That's 100%. My problem.
But I don't know if this team is going to spend money. So they have to be able to build this thing similar to a Cleveland or Milwaukee.
That's really unfortunate.
Well,
because imagine if the CBA agreement, the players, they don't want a salary cap.
No.
So the MLB, they're speaking two different languages. I mean, that's a whole nother thing with the MLB and the whole salary cap.
Yeah.
And the players don't want that. If the Nats are an option to just be a small market team, how do they get out of this?
Well,
Cleveland hasn't won. Tell me the last small market that has won a championship.
Oh, it's been a while. It's been a while.
St. Louis was the 15th best highest payroll when they won.
It's been a while. Now, you can make the argument like they're competitive. They just don't get done in October. Like the Brewers were in the NLCS last year. So like it can get to a point, but you often run into the buzzsaw like the Dodgers who are spending 4 and 5 times more money. So there is some of that. But we got to hit a break here. I want to keep this conversation going about the Nationals. You want to hop in 800-636-1067. And also, speaking of the pitchers, I had a chance to catch up with Cade Cavalli. We'll play that conversation before we get out of here as well. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan. Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you for about 25 minutes or so, taking you up until 10 o'clock. Talking about the Washington Nationals and talking about the confidence that you have in this team right now, and specifically Paul Toboni and Blake Butera and company in turning this thing around, and how much confidence you have in those guys after what you've seen through the first 63 games, Nationals 31 and 32. Mo brings up a good point, saying he had confidence in this team after winning some good series, and then you lose to the Marlins team and it makes you a little suspect on them. I don't know that you would still classify this Nationals team as good, unfortunately, but they're showing good tendencies.
Well, also the Marlins as well.
Huh?
I don't want to diss the Marlins either. They've put it together a very good team.
Yeah, they played well, but the Nationals did not play their best baseball in this series at all.
No, of course. I mean, they're a completely different team. I mean, you just went to Cleveland, who is beating the Yankees.
It's not taken away from the Marlins, but I've seen this Nationals team play before, and this was not the 2026 Nationals. This was the 2024, 2025 Nationals that I've seen play before, right? Like, I've seen them be uncompetitive in series against the Marlins. That wasn't necessarily the hallmark of this season. But I want to get to Cade Cavalli in just a second. First, though, one other thing on Toboni, and something that good front offices and general managers, president of baseball operations as he is, do a really good job of in Major League Baseball especially. You do this in other sports as well, but specifically in Major League Baseball, they identify guys that are highly talented players that aren't working out in other organizations and then bring them over to theirs, and suddenly they turn into the prospect or the player that you thought they could be. Curtis Meade was a top 50 prospect in all of baseball at one point and had kind of become forgotten about because it didn't work out with Tampa, which ironically, Tampa is generally one of those organizations that can identify guys and bring them in and fix them up. But it didn't work out for whatever reason in Tampa. It was doing nothing in Chicago with the White Sox, essentially. Comes over here, and he's turned into a guy that's playing every day now with a plus 800 OPS. Like, he has turned into a guy that might be a part of what their plans are long term. So that's another thing that gives you a tip in the cap, a feather in the cap of Paul Toboni. All right, had a chance to catch up with the ace of the Nationals, opening day starter Cade Cavalli, before today's game over at Nationals Park. Here's my conversation with the Nationals righty.
Toby Altizer here with Nationals starter Cade Cavalli. Cade, how you feel that getting into June and putting up some good numbers so far this season? How you feel about your start to the year?
Yeah, I feel good. I'm just trying to keep getting better every day. And, you know, every time I get the ball, I want to give us a chance to win the game. And that's what I'm working for.
What are some of the things that you're trying to get better at as the season goes on?
I think just kind of staying with what we're doing. Just trying to be consistent every time out there and, you know, keep the ball in the zone, stay on the attack, start the fight against the hitter, and, you know, just take care of what I can control.
It feels like as the season's gone on, maybe not this last outing, but you started to get a little more length in your outings. What could you attribute some of that to?
Yeah, I think that's just getting early action. You know, I give credit to the Marlins last time. Not that I was throwing a bunch of balls. The first inning was a little rough, but got out of it with only one run. And then, you know, got to some two-strike counts where they battled, and they were able to drive my pitch count up. And the games before that, we were able to put them away quicker. So, they're good hitters. You got to give them credit sometimes, but when I exited the ball game, we had a chance to win, and that's all I can really control.
Feels like a couple of times this season you've got into an inning where you maybe were cruising through the outing, but then maybe struggled to find the strike zone a little bit in an inning. How do you work on that as a pitcher? Like, get back in the zone, but obviously still be competitive to get guys out.
Yeah, I think it's you just got to do it. I don't really know how to explain it. It's just one of those deals where mentally you're like, I just got to get back in the zone and do it, you know?
Yeah, so this last Marlins start, talk us through that one a little bit, because it felt like you mentioned, pitch count got driven up a little bit. First inning was a little bit rough for you, but then you kind of settled in and pitched really well. What did you see and what did you feel like in that start?
Yeah, I think, my plan of attack was to try to stay up in the upper half of the zone with my fastball, and I was just missing up and kind of scratched it and just said, you know, I'm going to throw it in the zone, make these guys swing the bat. So I think that was a big change.
What have been some of the things that you've really been happy with that you've been able to do so far this season?
I think I've given us a chance to win the ball game when I exit the game. And that's what I'm here to do. I want to help this team win as many games as possible, and I feel like I've done a good job with that.
Is there a comfortability for you now with like the journey that you've gone on from making your debut to dealing with some injuries to last year finally coming back up and joining the club to now you're the starter for the Nationals. You're starting every fifth day. Is there a comfortability that comes with that, knowing that you know you're a big part of what this team needs?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super grateful to be in this position. And, you know, I've been around these guys a lot, so I'm super comfortable around them. We got a really good clubhouse, really good group of guys this year that we all accept each other for who we are, and we're just trying to win some games.
Toby Altizer talking with Cade Cavalli. Something that so many guys on this team have talked about is the communication of the staff. How have you seen that play out? Because that was something we talked about during spring training that people were really impressed with. Now you're getting into June of the baseball season. How have you seen that play out through the first couple of months?
Yeah, I think, you've seen on the offensive side, the way we were able to turn it around there from last year And you know, we've been pitching well in the recent, and we had a great spring. You know, the staff was getting to know us, and I think that they've just been able to communicate to each person in the way that they're able to receive the communication, comprehend it, and go put it into practice. So, you know, it takes time to get to know your guys when it's a new organization, but I think they've done a really good job at that.
Is that what you attribute, like, this staff in the month of April to May, the ERA as a whole, dropped by a run? Is that what you feel like guys are starting to get more comfortable, coaches with you guys with the coaches, and that's why you've started to see more success?
Yeah, I think that that's part of it, and I think that, you know, getting to leverage counts earlier, that's been a huge part of our success, you know, as starters and as even our bullpen guys. The quicker we can get to two strikes or even strike one, the better the results are going to be. You know, this the stats back it up. So that's something we looked at, and we want to make sure we're trying to control that, because that's something that's, you know, controllable. If we're going to lay it over the zone early and start the fight.
Couple more. I want to just ask you about this staff as a general. Who do you think on this staff isn't getting enough credit, whether it's a starter, whether it's out of the bullpen? Who do you think is not getting enough credit for what they've done for this team this year?
You know, it's hard to say for one guy, but I think that Orlando Ribalta, he's been great, man. He's been throwing in leverage spots that, you know, has helped us win some ball games, and his demeanor, his calmness out there, I think gives an ease to the team, and he's been great for us.
Last thing, if you had to take a pitch from anyone else on the team and add it to your arsenal, what would it be and why?
Zach Littell's splitter. I think he's got a really good splitter, and that's something that I don't throw, so that'd be nice to have.
That'd be fun to add to the rotation. All
great
right, man.
Good question.
Well, I appreciate it, and best of luck the rest of the season.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
That was National starting pitcher Cade Cavalli, and I think you can hear when you talk to him, he's very insightful, gives you some good talking points, and I think he's someone that it's fun to see his journey and now to see him pitching so well. Not this Marlins start, he didn't go deep into the game, but you've seen him be able to get deeper into games recently and starting to really turn into the pitcher that the Nationals thought they were getting and were going to be a big part of their future, and so I'm really impressed by him. And it's sometimes you have to remind yourself that this is his first full big league season. And so there are going to be some bumps along the way and things that he has to work through. But you're seeing him get better and better as the season goes on, and that's really encouraging. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, we'll wrap things up. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan. Final couple minutes of Overtime. Wes playing some bumps to make sure we can get through the rest of the night.
Are you not on the same level as me right now?
No. I'm winding down.
You know what I'm high for?
What?
Next week.
Defenders football?
Oh, yeah. Against Orlando.
They're in the playoff. Tell real quick. 20 seconds. Give us the lowdown. What can we expect?
Well, they've lost four in a row. They lost Joe and Tamu against the Kings in the first game that they played in the first quarter. I think Jason Bean is going to go out there. He's going to get the start. He's a third string. I think that this is a perfect opportunity for them to come back and show what they did, exactly what they did last year. They had struggles last year, and they end up winning the championship.
That was right on 20 seconds. I mean, that's elite.
Was it actually?
That was elite.
Let's go.
That's elite breakdown. Check out the DC Defender. Get it pumped up at 9:49 in the evening. Toby Altizer with you for a couple more minutes. NBA Finals Game 1. Going on right now. It's at halftime. Score this one. The Spurs have a 7-point lead, 55-48. I've had it on, but I haven't been able to pay attention fully. How about this? 15 points in the first half from Julian Champagne, the twin brother of Justin Champagne. 5 of 6 from 3 in the first half to go along with 6 boards. How about Dylan Harper off the bench? 12 points, 4 of 5 from the field, 1 of 2 from deep with 6 boards. As well, Wemby largely held in check on the offensive side. 9 points, just 2 of 8 from the field with 3 blocks. Jalen Brunson was able to return and get back into the game, so hopefully Jalen Brunson going to be good to go. He's got 11 points. Karl Anthony Towns has 8 to go along with 6 boards. So good first half of action. The Spurs got off to a good start after the Knicks led early. They ended up outscoring New York 27-19 in the first quarter. Then New York outscored them by one in the second quarter, 29-28. So that's how you have a 7-point lead for San Antonio in the first half, 55-48. It's going to be a fun series to watch. It's fun to see teams getting up and down the floor, and I think that atmosphere in San Antonio is great, and I think it's going to be a fun one to watch at MSG as well. But the Spurs lead it by 755-248. Before we get out of here, I saw that Darnell Washington just signed a big deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. 4 years, $42 million. And anytime I see tight ends, it makes me think of the steal that the Washington Commanders got this offseason with Chigakonkwo. I think he's going to be a massive part of this offense this year, and I think he's going to help them out a lot. I think that he is going to be massive for what they're going to do on offense this year, and I think he gives you a little bit of everything. Now, I do want to preface this by saying J.P. Flame of the Junks was getting clowned on Twitter recently about a take that he had about Zach Ertz and Chigakonkwo and saying that it's a lateral move of sorts. I didn't hear the exact audio, but that was the premise of it, I believe. And a lot of people were like, what the heck is he talking about? That's a terrible take. And I understand that Chigakonkwo is going to be a massive help for this offense. You also can't disrespect what Zach Ertz did for this offense. Zach Ertz, while he wasn't explosive, and while he wasn't the Zach Ertz that killed the Burgundy and Gold for a long time with the Eagles, he was still someone that was incredibly reliable. When you got into big spots, I mean, think back to 2024. How many times when they needed something, they would go to that angle route to Zach Ertz? And he's someone that you could always depend on catching the football. And he wasn't going to be able to go deep. He wasn't going to be able to give you anything after the catch. No yak, Zach. But he was going to give you some dependability in the middle of the field. And so when you look at what Zach Ertz has done the last two seasons compared to what you've seen throughout the first couple of years of Chigakonkwo's career, I don't think it's crazy to say that it could be a lateral move of sorts. Now, I'd rather have Chigakonkwo now, but in his 2 years in Washington, Zach Ertz went for 66 catches for 654 yards and 50 catches last year in 13 games for 504 yards. Chigakonkwo's largest output in a single season was last year, and he went for 560 yards. Now, I think that he's going to be better in this offense, and I think you could see him go for 650, 700 yards or more. But I think it's a little bit crazy and disrespectful, frankly, to Zach Ertz to act like that take is just the stupidest thing ever. I think Zach Ertz was a really dependable piece for this offense, and it's actually a role that's not getting talked about enough, in my opinion, that has to be filled. Not necessarily the Zach Ertz no-yak role, but who's the security blanket? Who's the dependable guy outside of Terry McLaurin, because they're going to send coverage Terry's way, that you know for a fact on third and four and you need to pick up 5 yards you can go to? Who's the guy that on third and goal from the two that you have to pass the ball because you haven't been able to run it? Who's the guy that you know you can throw the football to and will be open, even if it's not creating lots of separation, but can get their body right, box out, and catch the football? That was Zach Ertz. That's a role that matters in an offense. That's not nothing. I know he didn't give you anything after the catch. I know he wasn't the most exciting player on offense, but that does matter. To always know that you could go to 86 was huge for this team. It was massive. So not having that as a part of the offense this year, it's a loss. I think Chigakonkwo could step into that role. I think maybe you have one of the receivers step into that role. Regardless, that is something that I'm curious to see filled. But back to Chigakonkwo, I think what they're going to be able to do with him this season and be able to get him the football early and just let him create, get him stuff near the line of scrimmage and let him run, he's going to be a massive part of what they're going to be trying to do. And he'll work well as someone that can slide across the formation, go in motion, create different matchups, create different leverages, and he's just so impressive as an athlete. And I'm excited to see what they're going to be able to do with him, because Blau is very creative, like we talked about, and like you've seen or heard from plenty of the players out there. And you've seen him being motioned and used in different ways. I think that they're going to try to build some stuff specifically to him, where maybe they don't have a number two receiver, quote unquote, but he'll be their second leading receiving option. They're going to get him the football a lot and use him in different ways to get him the ball in the middle of the field. You can have him working in tandem with some of the receivers where, you know, he's running a little bit of a shallow, someone's running a little bit deeper, see who they go to, those sorts of things. I think that's going to be fun to watch. And I'm also curious to see how they can do getting the ball to guys out of the backfield. Do they get the ball to Rashad White a lot, who's a good receiving back? Does Bill improve? I know it's been a big thing that he wasn't practicing. Not a big deal that he's not participating. He's been there. So we see what the issue is with him there. But, you know, hopefully he's going to be all right for the season. I wouldn't be that worried about it. He seemed fine at practice the other day. So hopefully that's the case. But I think Chigakonkwo is going to be a big part of their offense this season. Excited to see how they're going to be able to utilize him. All right, that's going to do it for us on Overtime. Appreciate you all hanging out. It's been fun watching the NBA Finals. Had a good time talking about that. Also had a good time talking about the Commanders and the Nationals. If you missed any of tonight's game, Wes's been doing a great job behind the scenes podcasting everything. You missed the Jalen Lane interview, Cade Cavalli interview. Make sure to check that out. Also, checking out the new Bustin' Loose Baseball, which will be out tomorrow. For Wes Clark, doing all the hard work behind the scenes, I'm Toby Altizer. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your evening.